Ay. I just noticed there was a typo. Someone's using the phone to call in on the meeting. I'm going to send out an email to everybody about that.
Okay.
I entered the wrong meeting ID number for the telephone. Give me 1 second.
Bob with his new haircut.
Hello, everybody. How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Very good. We had a slight glitch in the original email I sent. I just sent everybody a new email. If you tend to come in via phone, I had a typo on the previous meeting ID for the phone call. So I just resent that out. One of these days I'll figure out technology.
There she is. Hi, Candace.
Hi.
And Amy too?
Hello.
Ginger, Dr. Rosen, we're getting here. And Jean.
Hello.
So there's Jean, you got your leg propped up?
I do. I'm sitting in my recliner with my leg up.
Jean broke her ankle over the weekend.
Oh.
No fun. No weight bearing for 8 weeks.
Oh, that's harsh, Jean.
Yes.
So if Jean says, as she said, if she says something stupid tonight, it's the Norco, you guys.
What excuse for the rest of us?
All right, and we do have what appears to be a quorum right now, so we are past the meeting date. Okay. I am going to press record, and we are official.
Okay.
Okay, so I want to welcome everybody to the Health Commission virtual meeting. This is the special meeting for June 18, 2020. With regards to public comment, please follow the instructions here. You can email any public comment to mcoglin@co.slo.ca.us as long as we receive your public comment by the end of this meeting. We will read it during the meeting. To obtain an agenda or a copy agenda or minutes, please Google San Luis Obispo Health Commission, and you will see a link on that page to take you to the meeting recording or to the minutes and agendas. And if anyone needs to make a comment from the commissioners, please keep your microphones on mute and raise your hand or take off mute if you do not have video and signify that you would like to make a comment. And please wait for Mary Jean to acknowledge you before you make your comment. And with that, I will give you our chairperson, Mary Jean Sage.
Okay, thank you, Mike, and thank you all for being with us this evening as we do our second virtual meeting. Our first agenda item is public comment. I do understand we've had a couple of public comments, so I'll ask Mike to read those, please.
All right, we have one member connecting with audio, so I'll wait 1 second before I begin. Okay. We do have two public comments. The first public comment is from a Chalice Behm, B-E-H-M, and public comment begins, "Hello, I am a concerned business owner of a gym in Slo County. We have been strongly recommending masks to our members, but not enforcing them as intense physical exercise while wearing a mask can impede breathing and oxygen uptake. I am deeply concerned that mandating a mask will deter members from using our facility and from working out as intensely as they would like. We have already implemented a rigorous sanitizing schedule, rearranged our floor plan to have trainers and staff wearing masks during all interactions with members, and enforcing a capacity limit that allows for ample social distancing. I would like to know if I am required to turn away members if they choose not to wear a mask while working out, or can I allow them to take their mask off during high intensity training, such as running on the treadmill or performing functional fitness? The health and longevity of our members is our number one priority. I am truly afraid that this mask on mandate could impact us severely and that we may lose members who have already gone too long without a proper workout and rely on us for their mental and physical health." And that is from Chalice Behm. Public comment two is from Rob Stone. "At today's virtual meeting of the County Health Commission with Dr. Borenstein, please speak out about the mandatory mask requirement. Some businesses seem to be under the impression that they will be fined if they allow customers into their establishments without masks. This afternoon, my teenage son encountered an issue at the gas station. He went to the market to pay cash, but the shopkeeper would not allow him inside without a mask. He informed the clerk that he has asthma and could the clerk come out to get the money for the gas, but the clerk refused. Should my son carry a note from his doctor indicating wearing a mask restricts his breathing? What would that make a difference? He normally doesn't have any asthma issues, but with recent fires, his asthma is flaring up. I hope our public health department could announce to the community that they should at least provide reasonable accommodation to those who have difficulty wearing a mask. And that is public comment from Robert Stone.
Okay.
I'm just checking to see if anything else came in. Hold on 1 second. And that is the end of public comment.
So we'll take those comments to study them, and hopefully Dr. Rosen actually will be talking a little bit about the mandate. It's fairly new. It only came out today, and so I'm sure there will be lots of questions about it. So let's go ahead and take a look at our consent items. We have two things in the consent items that we need to approve. We're going to withdraw 3.1 and 3.2, which is the approval of our meeting minutes, because as you know, Mike hasn't been in his regular office for some months now. So our recordings are on the website, which is fine. People can view those. So we'll hold off on the minutes until Mike gets a chance to do them. But we have 3.2. So the last two items are to approve a member appointment to fill the final direct provider position that we have on the commission, and you all have the application of Lynn Enns, who's been on the commission before for a very long time. She's an RN. And we also have the reappointment of Tamar. Her term is up, and she's seeking reappointment for 4 more years. Those are what we have this month. Next month, I believe, we will have another reappointment. But can I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Jean Raymond moved. Commissioner Campbell seconds.
Yes.
Okay. Mike, what kind of a vote can we do? Just a raise of hands? You have to unmute yourself, Mike.
Technology. We will have to have each member go through. What I will do is call off a member's name.
Okay.
At that point, unmute and verbally state what your vote is.
Okay.
So
we'll have a roll call then.
Yes. Robert Campbell?
Yes, on both applications.
Candace?
Yes.
Amy? Amy, try unmuting one more time. Jean Raymond?
Yes.
Ginger?
Yes.
And Mary Jean Sage?
Yes.
Motion has passed unanimously.
Thank you. Do we have any updates on our previous meeting topics? If we can remember what our previous meeting topics were, it's been quite some time since we've actually had a program. Okay. I think we will talk a little bit about a couple of the things that we have had in the past, the vaccine issue for one, and also Tobacco Coalition met this month, so I'm sure Commissioner Campbell will be reporting on that. So let's go ahead at this point and ask Dr. Rosen, who's here on Dr. Borenstein's behalf, to give us the public health report.
Wow. Hello.
Hi, Rick.
Thanks. I apologize for the lack of video. I am now situated in the new government center, so it's a change of venue. In terms of COVID-19, the update is that we've seen a pretty significant increase in the number of new cases over the course of this week. To give you a sense, yesterday we had a total of 19 new cases. Today, up to the present time, we've had 14 new cases. We currently have 9 individuals hospitalized, with 4 of those in the ICU. There were 6 folks in the hospital at the start of the week, so that's a relatively significant increase as well. Significant developments, which you mentioned already, one is the state issuing a requirement for face coverings in most settings outside of the home, is the wording that was used in the guidance. Essentially, it makes a requirement what has already been a recommendation, which is that individuals should wear masks in situations where maintaining 6 feet of physical distancing is difficult or not possible. So that would include situations where individuals are passing in hallways or in an elevator, that sort of thing. In addition, it includes indoor public spaces. It mentions when individuals obtain services within the healthcare sector, and when individuals are riding on public transportation or any sort of shared transportation, which includes something like a taxi or an Uber or other ride-sharing service. And it extends to the workplace in situations where, again, where people aren't able to maintain adequate social distancing, as well as work settings where individuals are involved in food preparation or packaging. And it extends to public spaces in the outdoors, again, where physical distancing of 6 feet is not possible, unless it's someone from your own family or household, in which case that's acceptable as a unit. And there are exceptions, which have already been alluded to in one of the public comments, those being children under 2 years of age. The requirement would not apply. Aged 2 and under. So basically children 3 and up are expected to wear a mask or face covering. And exceptions include those with underlying medical or mental health conditions, which make mask wearing either difficult or just not feasible, as well as those with either hearing impairment or those who must communicate with someone with hearing impairment. Those are the major exceptions. There's also the case of individuals who may be seated at a restaurant So obviously it's difficult to wear a face covering when you're eating. So there's an allowance for removing your face covering while eating or drinking. And there is an exception as well for prisons and jails, in that they are directed to have their own specific mitigation plans. So getting back to the public comment, I think that I don't have a very good answer for that at the moment. I think that is a scenario that we will see come up quite often for individuals who have underlying health conditions and cannot wear masks for that reason. So I think in those scenarios, the ideal is to have some sort of accommodation that would allow for an interaction in an open air sort of setting, whenever that might be possible. And at this point, that would be all that I would have to say in that regard. The other public comment related to fitness centers, you know, that's really a tough one. So, the idea is that if we're talking about intense physical exertion, the reality is that is better performed in the outdoors rather than indoors. Again, physical distancing is the most important feature, but from a public health standpoint, I would be much more comfortable with that in the outdoors rather than in an indoor environment, because I'm concerned about the generation of aerosol. But that being said, the state guidance does allow for things like, you know, group exercise classes, as long as the class size is limited to ensure a minimum of 6 feet of distance. Contact sports like a pickup basketball game, as an example, still are not permitted. In other news, on the public health front, we have seen an uptick, really the first time that we've seen cases of COVID-19 amongst residents in assisted living facilities. And currently conducting outbreak investigations at 4 different assisted living facilities across the county, with cases involving either residents or staff or both. And that is a new development this week. In addition, by the end of last week, we managed to clear all 11 individuals who had been placed in isolation at the California Men's Colony. The middle of this week, we had a new case identified amongst a staff member. So we are once again performing testing and contact tracing at California Men's Colony. No other cases have been identified at this point with this current investigation. And that is all I have to report at the moment. For the most part, we are, with respect to guidance in terms of reopening, we are deferring to state guidance, which is on the COVID-19.ca.gov resilience roadmap site, and doing our best to fill in gaps or questions that various industries might have related to that guidance.
Okay, thank you for being with us, Dr. Rosen. I'm sure we have some questions. And my first one would be, and I don't mean to put you on the spot because I know the mandate from state is new today, but are we as a county planning to do any kind of outreach or something for these businesses and everybody else that have all these questions about how we interpret it and how we handle it?
Right. So I know that Dr. Bornstein is currently working on a statement, both internally for and county employees in conjunction with our human resources department and also public facing for the county. So I would expect that to come out tomorrow.
Okay. Other commissioners that might have questions. Candace.
Yeah, I have a couple. One, for the person that was talking about having breathing issues, I wonder if we could be recommending face shields for those folks. I know there's been some stuff that has come out that shows that face shields can be fairly effective. I'm wondering if that's something we could add.
I think that's a very good idea.
Then the question, I have a couple questions about testing, if that's okay.
Sure.
Does the county, as we get more cases coming in, I don't remember from the beginning whether the county has a place for people to isolate if they don't want to spread to their vulnerable household members. Do we have that here or no?
So, right, that's a... We have, that is an option for healthcare workers,
yes,
as an example. Beyond that, I would not say that that option is currently available.
Right. Okay, thanks. And I wondered about, I guess this is sort of related to testing, maybe peripherally, as we get more cases, I don't remember the state guidance for when you start to go backwards. Do you remember? Do you know what that is? So currently we're in phase three, two. I can't remember the numbers. I'm so sorry. I should have looked it up. But at what point do we have so many cases and or so many people in the hospital that we stop going forwards and start to kind of think about moving away from some of the things that are open now?
Oh, sorry. So that is an excellent question, and I don't, unfortunately, have an answer for you. So I have the same question in mind. In terms of stages, that also, so we are in both stage two and stage three. So that the stages designation sort of went out the window when they started introducing different sectors of the economy for reopening. But we still have the important distinction between stage three and stage four, which is when either medications or vaccine or both are effective and available. So that remains an important distinction, but right now, sort of the stage two, stage three distinction has been rendered irrelevant, basically. In terms of a threshold for when to go back to, say, shelter at home, that is unclear, and I'm waiting myself to see what that looks like.
Okay, thank you. I guess I have one more question about testing that I just remembered. because I have school-age kids, we just got an email from the middle school about choosing whether or not our kids are going to be virtual all year or whether the kids are going to start school and then would potentially be pulled back. And if you choose virtual all year, you can't go back into the physical classroom without some kind of hassle. Anyway, I understand they're trying to get some numbers to try to figure out how many people want to come to school. And I guess I wonder, around testing, how are there plans to test kids?
So right now we haven't made any plans or schedules around testing of children. So that's an open question.
Right. I mean, I know they're lower risk. I'm just thinking about transmission.
Right.
All right. That's it. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Campbell.
You knew I was going to pop my hand up, didn't you?
I did, but that's quite all right. We were just waiting.
I've been spending a lot of time on the daily dashboard of cases, Rick, and I'm wondering, do we track as along with the new tests that are positive each day, are we also tracking how many negative tests are reported that same day?
That is also a very good question. So the short answer is yes. The reality is that has been an ongoing challenge because we rely on CalReady to do that, and not all labs have robust mechanism for electronic lab reporting that allows for us to see all of the negative tests. That has gotten much better as things have moved along, but we're still at a point where not all major labs testing in our community are reporting all of their negative tests.
Wow. What percent of positive tests become symptomatic or are symptomatic at the time the test is taken?
So that is another very good question. So I've seen a fairly broad range of anywhere from 4 to 40%, depending on the setting. I can only tell you anecdotally my sense of that, because we don't have, that's not a specific statistic that we've looked at within our own group of confirmed cases. We are establishing, obviously, on a case by case basis, whether or not someone is symptomatic or asymptomatic, but just haven't looked at those numbers. But anecdotally, I would say that probably about a fifth of our positive cases are asymptomatic.
And so 80% are symptomatic at the time the test is taken?
Yes. And the age group that is most often asymptomatic is children. But we've seen asymptomatic individuals in every age group.
So that suggests that there are an awful lot of positive people in the community who we never get to test.
Yes, I think that's one of if you ask me, I would say that that's what is sort of special about this virus, is that there is a significant amount of asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic transmission, which makes it pretty difficult to deal with.
If we had some way to compile that data, I think it would be very helpful in convincing the public that all of us who are feeling healthy and optimistic still have a duty to our fellow residents, not to harm them. And enough said there.
Right, I think that's a great idea. So I will bring that up in terms of the way we approach data and how we look at it.
Yeah, I think it would be very, very worthwhile publicizing.
Right, right.
Where, you know, you read, 40%, Candace, I think, something like that, are asymptomatic but potentially infectious to the person standing next to them in line at the deli. And I think that might be persuasive to more and more people to wear a mask, even though they feel just fine and dandy. And my last question on the dashboard is, I've just discovered the, I think it's one of the final graphs, and one of the trends is active test. Does that mean that does that reflect the number of people who are positive that day and feeling sick to some degree?
I'd have to look at the dashboard. So I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't give you an answer, but do you know what the lineups are above and below us?
I can pull it up here. So the lines above it are recovered, and then above that is total positive cases. I assume that's just total positive tests.
Yes.
And below it is hospital and ICU and deaths, which barely move above the baseline on the way that graph is constructed.
Right. So, and the category you're talking about is active tests?
It says active cases.
Active cases. Ah, okay. So active cases are cases that are neither recovered nor deceased.
Okay.
So that would apply to those folks that we're following as they isolate.
Yeah. So it looks like that's about 75 or 80 people today.
Yes. Yeah, increasing fast.
Yes.
I have an example, and I don't know how you record these statistics. Okay, I had surgery on Monday for my ankle. They had to do a COVID test. It was sent to Marion. I was at the hospital, French.
Yes.
So as those numbers are testing, and we have two counties on either side, how do you delineate those differences and what it means for the big picture?
How do we delineate the differences between testing that happens in Santa Barbara County versus San Luis Obispo County?
It's a hospital system. They send the they send the test down to Marion to be tested because they have the bigger lab.
Right.
And that, so do you have a way of knowing, and we have a lot of people come to visit us here from other places. So how do you keep track of those kinds of things? I'm sure in tracing you do, because that's what you guys do very well.
Right. So the test, the lab results that we see are tied to the individual and their stated place of residence. So if you live in Slo County, but your test is processed in Marion, we still see your lab result and count it as our result. And likewise, the same holds true if we have a county resident who happens to be hospitalized at Marion. We still count them as they are counted in our number of hospitalized patients.
So I have a question along those lines, Dr. Rosen.
Yes.
Are we paying attention to the numbers in our neighboring counties like Kern and Fresno?
Yes. Yeah, we have been following those numbers. Until very recently, all those numbers had been increasing pretty significantly, with the exception of Monterey County. Monterey County's numbers then started to increase about 1 to 2 weeks ago, and now our numbers are increasing. So we're doing pretty well. We were more or less winning the race for a while, but now our numbers are also tracking upwards.
Okay. Well, we have a lot of visitors on the weekends from other areas that come into our county, and I assume they would go back and get tested in their county, and the numbers would be just like it is in our previous conversation. The numbers would be reported there. So, okay. Mike and Amy. First Mike and then Amy. Mike, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I have one additional public comment that came in.
Okay.
You want to take that now or at the end of the segment?
Let's let Amy speak first, and then we'll do the public comment, okay?
Rick, my question is about moving the testing site from Paso down to San Luis Obispo, what that is looking like, and if you can talk a little bit about the migration of where we're seeing the clusters of the new cases pop up.
Sure. So there is definitely, North County continues to have a very high number of cases, although we are seeing more cases in South County as well. Based on the distribution of cases, it would make sense to have a testing site, a state-sponsored testing site in North County. The reason we moved it was just because of the low utilization. But we are regularly discussing where our test sites are located. And you know, thinking about what sort of where the next destination might be. And we're also continuing our other testing efforts. There has been a hitch with some of those in terms of delayed results, but we've stopped working with the entity that we were seeing those delayed results with, and are currently partnering with UCSF to process results from our community testing sites. That it has been much more reliable. But we're going to revisit how we're handling community testing at the end of this month.
And with the new cases, can you talk about where they're clustering I read a little bit about there was pockets of close family contact as well as potential about a couple graduation parties. So you could talk about where those cases are stemming from.
Yeah, so there are a lot of cases associated with parties, for sure. That is a trend that we've noticed. The other thing that I have seen in particular are these cases that have come up related to assisted living facilities. Mm-hmm. I would say those are the two most notable trends, gatherings and assisted living facilities.
Okay. And do you think the new state reporting mandate for mask wearing in those settings will have any impact for those reasons, or are we thinking that will have more of an impact in outdoor spaces?
I do think so. My hope, yes, is that mask wearing will have an impact, but but the reality is that people who have private gatherings and parties, that is a concern. So the hope is that they will in fact wear masks when they have those gatherings. That, however, is very difficult to enforce. So we're dependent on the really on the goodwill of the community to wear their masks when they get together.
Thanks, Rick.
Sure.
So I have one more question that kind of goes along with what you were talking about with Amy, Rick. So do we know the availability of masks out in the public? So for instance, if we were trying to educate people who are going to have these gatherings, is have a supply of masks on hand, and if people come to a gathering in your home or whatever, give everybody a mask. Is the availability of the mask there?
Right. So cloth face coverings are widely available, and I have noticed them for sale at most large retailers. Like Kohl's, for example, sells cloth masks, and they are available online as well. So they're readily available. Surgical masks are another issue, but for that sort of setting, we would encourage that folks use cloth face coverings rather than surgical face masks, which we should consider PPE that should be used primarily in the healthcare setting.
Well, and I noticed that masks are readily available at office supply stores also, like... Mm-hmm. Whatever, what is it, Office Depot or Office Max or whatever our local office supply place is, they are advertising their availability all the time.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, I don't think there's any issue in terms of access to cloth face coverings. And we have been distributing cloth face coverings at meal events. And food distribution across the county to try to get them out to people who might have a hard time paying for masks and face coverings. So the cloth face coverings are out there and readily available for sure.
Any other questions for Dr. Rosen? And then Ginger, okay.
So am I up or Ginger?
You're up. It's your turn.
All right. Rick, I know this state mandate, if that's what it is, has just been dropped on you. And you mentioned enforcement a few moments ago. I'm thinking about, so I live in Avila. Frank, especially on a weekend, I'm afraid to go into town.
Right.
Teeming, you know, there are days when it's hard to find a mask. And I'm thinking specifically about the staff who service all these visitors. And, I've seen clerks in stores who are standing face to face with just a long line of customers, none of whom are wearing masks. the clerk is not wearing a mask. And it just seems like a really potentially explosive situation. These poor, you know, they're mostly kids and or very young adults. They need that job, and they're just pinned against the wall. And can the county selectively check on enforcement in specific higher risk areas? I guess that's the essence of my question.
Right. Well, I think that is the question, and why I don't have a sense of what Penny's statement will look like, but that is, I think, the holdup is the question of enforcement and what that looks like.
Yeah.
That is the challenge.
You know, we have a population of people who are just in the line of fire all day long. And it would be nice if we could selectively protect them what we can.
Right.
Thanks, Rick.
Sure.
Ginger?
All right. I have a question in regards to, for employers, in regards to employees, now that people are traveling more. I'm thinking specifically, I'm working in the healthcare setting. So if there's an employee that leaves, so let's say, to go out of state and then comes back to work, or maybe travels, you know, down south, maybe to LA, or maybe is internationally traveling, is it recommended before they come back to work that they need to get screened or they should stay quarantined? Is there...
Right. So, yeah, and that is a very common question. So the current position, whether it makes sense or not, is that direction from the CDC is that individuals who travel internationally should quarantine upon return to the U.S., but the same does not apply for domestic travel. So the only exception based on our guidance is if a healthcare worker travels to a known hotspot to volunteer or work in healthcare in that setting, then we would recommend that they quarantine upon return. But otherwise, domestic travel is not an indication for quarantine.
Okay. So if someone's internationally traveling, then they should stay quarantined.
Correct.
Better than just getting tested, correct?
Correct, okay. Yeah. Okay. That's the guidance from the CDC.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Other questions? Let's take the public comment, Mike, please.
And we have two additional public comments. The first public comment is from Josh Donovan. I am a gym operator in Atascadero Give Fitness Health Club. I would like to fully endorse the first public comment regarding gyms and the concerns surrounding potential requirement of masks. Dr. Rosen mentioned preferring that exercise takes place outside, but we are entering extremely hot months and many people benefit from being able to exercise in a cool environment. With proper social distancing efforts, spacing machines, and vigorous sanitation, I believe that an exemption should be made for fitness centers who have made those accommodations. And that is public comment from Josh Donovan. The second additional public comment is from Christy Webb. I am still a bit confused regarding the order to wear masks in grocery stores, restaurants, people standing in line to order, and workers in these facilities that handle food. I live in Cambria, and our market said they would only require masks if they heard from the county that they had to. They have an outbreak in their deli section where the workers did not wear masks, Is it mandatory or is it still decided by individual owner of these stores and restaurants? Also, many of the people, especially tourists, do not wear masks in grocery stores. Please clarify. And that is from Christy Webb.
So I can respond to the latter public comment. So under the new guidance from the state regarding mask wearing, it would be required to wear a face covering in a supermarket, for example. The idea being that it's an indoor setting with that hosts the public, and it's inevitable that people will be passing each other within 6 feet. So that is the sort of setting where individuals would be required to wear face coverings. Again, there are certain exceptions, like underlying medical conditions that would make wearing face coverings impractical. Likewise with young children, but otherwise that is those settings that you describe are settings where face coverings would be required.
Okay, does that do it for public comment, Mike, what we have to this point?
That is it for public comment.
Okay. All right. Well, again, thank you, Dr. Rosen, for being with us. You've answered a lot of questions. I think we all understand what got dropped down from the state today. There's lots of discussion that will be held about that. There are a lot of things that need to be decided, and the enforcement issue is kind of an unknown at this time. But I know we all on the commission will do our part in wearing our masks. We know when we should and why we need to do that. And if we can encourage our counterparts out there in the public to do that, I do think a public education campaign about the value of masks is probably in order. So with that, let's go ahead and do health commissioner updates. Anybody had any meetings with their liaison groups? Bob, you did. I think I saw you on the Tobacco Coalition meeting.
I was going to try to punt to you, Mary Jean. I honestly don't remember much about it.
So Tobacco Coalition did have a Zoom meeting. They are, you know, a lot of what they do are around youth and kids and activities. So they have, obviously, like everybody else, had to rethink their campaigns that are going on. We have, I forget the name of it, the Great Smokeout or something day coming up. So Tobacco Coalition will be coordinating with the environmental group here, EcoSlow, there we go, in doing their having their major cleanup day coming up in a few months also, where generally, you know, we pick up lots of cigarette butts. So they'll be encouraging everybody to do kind of a house cleaning at their own homes or in their own neighborhoods or whatever. So they'll be handing out bags and things like that. So Tobacco Coalition will be partnering with them to put out some information about vaping and that. There are some interesting statistics that have come out about our youth and the fear of vaping around COVID-19. This might be an opportunity to really hammer it home to them, the effects of this. It surprised me anyway that the numbers were as high as they were, that there were that many youth that are concerned about it at this point. So this, you know, might be something that they're paying attention to. So they're working on their things going forward with that. And then I think we had a couple of other they had a couple other suggestions about some things they wanted to do with the school district and that. And I think Bob and I did kind of volunteer that we would support those, the health commission would support those things that they were wanting to do with some flyers and things like that. So if that comes along, we will be putting our name on that to support the whole issue of, you know, no teen vaping, no vaping period, and the detrimental effects to your health. So that was Tobacco Coalition. Anybody else?
Yes, I Zoomed with the Adult Services Policy Council meeting, and they had guest speaker was the long-term care ombudsman. She was talking about what's happening in skilled facilities. Uh-huh. And the caregivers are key because a lot of them work in more than one facility. So kind of screening, and then some of them that kind of work in some of the assisted living. So, you know, they're really kind of regulated a little bit different, assisted living and skilled facilities. And then the other thing that she did bring up, and it's something we need to keep in mind, you know, as the budget's getting cut, we need to make sure that this vulnerable population, that the services don't get cut, so we don't have the taste testing capabilities, because really it's like, you know, Rick was talking about, you identify and then you make sure that you're going to be tracking what's going on. So with the budget, I hope they're not going to be cutting any of those services for the seniors. So anyway, that's just, you know, kind of what happened. She discussed what they do in skilled facilities, and then that assisted living is a little bit different because of regulations.
So is it harder to control it at assisted living?
Really, it's just residential living. So it's just like living in an apartment. And some people need extra care, and those are the ones that get the home health aides and all the others that come into the facilities. So as far as state and federal regulations, skilled nursing facilities are highly regulated. Not so much for residential and assisted living. So they have different, you know, rules and regulations, but still have some of the same caregivers that may be working at both. Because, you know, it's like senior friendly or senior 55 and older communities type of things where people have the accommodations they need. And in assisted living, they may have, you know, congregate meals and things like that.
Sure. I can imagine it would be a little harder to control it in those scenarios. Okay. Thanks. Mike?
I do have one additional public comment, and I just want a housekeeping note since we are outside of the regular scheduled period for the meeting. Any additional public comment that comes in will be added to the record for the meeting, but it will not be read aloud from this point forward. This is a reply to a previous public comment from Christy Webb, and it reads, "Does the county require it?" And I believe this is referring to the requirement for a face covering in a grocery store setting.
Okay. Amy, did I see your hand up? Okay.
I attended the Healthy Communities meeting virtually on June 4th, and we primarily talked about a senior living center that is up for proposal in Oreo Grande, quite next to the high school on Pilgrim Way. We submitted planning commission comments generally in support of the assisted living facility due to that need for it in this county, in favor of it because it is due to, it is close to the proximity of services, hospitals and medical offices. The only main concern for mitigation was that it is near a freeway, so there's concern for diesel particulate matter and noise pollution. All in all, it is a really great location, with the only downside of it being close to the highway for those seniors.
Okay. And that was approved by the Planning Commission, actually, earlier.
A couple days ago. Mm-hmm.
And all the outside activities or activity areas are actually in the center of that facility. So it is somewhat protected. So.
Yeah, sort of like an indoor courtyard that's surrounded by the building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have just a couple. The Human Trafficking Task Force will be Zooming for their next meeting, which is next week, the 25th, 9:30 in the morning. I have the details if anybody wants to participate in that. And then lastly, the Preventive Health Grant, CBO Grant Application Committee has finished their work. We reviewed, I think, 66 applications. We didn't have as many applications this year as we have in the past. We have sent our recommendations on to the county, and I believe the Board of Supervisors will be making their decisions about accepting our recommendations and distributing those funds sometime in July. So there were some really good applications. I think we really tried to look at what we thought the next year would be bringing, with a lot of need for housing and food and some of those things. But we did have quite a variety of applications. So let us go on to our committee reports, if we will. Community education, Candace, I know you and Tamar have talked at least.
Yes, so Tamar and I had a conference call, just a quick short meeting to discuss trying to help do some more outreach and education around the hot topic of tonight, which is wearing masks. And to try to promote and change the norms around mask wearing. And as Commissioner Campbell was saying, to try to help people to understand that even if you're not sick, you can still spread disease. And it's sort of our duty to our whole population to not do that. So we talked about a campaign like I Wear a Mask When, or I Wear a Mask Because, like because my mom has COPD, or when I go to the grocery store, and trying to find community leaders or from a variety of places, our political community leaders, but business leaders, maybe in faith-based communities, things like that, that might want to participate, maybe getting their picture taken in a mask or talking about why they think wearing masks is a really good idea. And so we put that together with, we're also talking about promoting childhood vaccines. As Dr. Rosen had mentioned at our last meeting, we're falling down a little bit with our vaccination schedules and percent of people that are getting their kids vaccinated because of COVID, probably. And so trying to get more parents and caregivers to bring their kids in to get vaccinated, and how we can promote that as well at different like daycares and day camps and things like that. So mostly it's brainstorming right now, but I think Tamar sent an email to Dr. Rosen, and we heard that we might hook up with a couple people in the county to try to work together with them about around promoting mask wearing and childhood vaccinations.
Thank you. Sounds like so good. And if anybody wants to volunteer to help them on that, I'm sure you're aware. Hey, look at her. Yes, they will certainly take volunteers. Okay. I think the only other committee that might have something is nominating Jean. I think we still have a couple consumer spots open on our commission. Two?
Any of the people calling in, if they're interested, they can always call and put in their applications so that they can become part of the Health Commission. Uh-huh. And so we did, you know, we made the recommendation for the people that are direct providers, and that should get us where we need to be. But currently we need to make sure that we get some healthcare consumers.
Okay. All right. Good. So, and maybe when things quiet down just a little bit, Mike, we can put something in the newspaper, maybe we can put it on the website as well and let people know that we have a couple openings. We would encourage them to apply if they are so interested.
We definitely can do.
So is there anything else that we need to go over this evening? Well, before we adjourn, I would like for all of you to join me in congratulating Mike, who is going to get married on Saturday. planning a wedding has been quite the feat during this time, I'm sure. But we wish you well. I'm sure it'll all come out fine, and we'll be anxious to hear about it the next time we all get together.
Okay? Oh, definitely.
All right, good. All right, again, thank you all for being with us, and I think we will. Jean, did you have one other thing you want to say? Oh, she's waiting. Okay. So with that, I think we will be adjourned. Thank you all. Take care.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, everybody.